Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Chris Canty this week. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And all week long, we've been having a conversation about our Christmas lists, making a bunch of top five lists, taking you guys up to the Christmas holiday here. We will get to some news around college football that'll affect the playoffs. We will get to NFL tiers. But first, we need someone to weigh in, an expert of sorts. Jason Fitz, host of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio from 7 to 9 Eastern, as well as college football analyst for us here at work. Jason also spent a large portion of his life as a classically trained musician. He was a part of the band Perry in country music for years. Jason is, as he will tell you, 5 minutes into every conversation, is a Grammy voter. And so, Jason, I want to ask
you. Don't forget winner. Grammy winner, too. 13 nominees, one win. Go ahead.
I do feel like you should start with winner.
I mean, listen, I know he's going to do it himself if I just give him a long enough time to do this. So, Jason,
Grammy winner.
I made the claim yesterday that I think we are making better Christmas music now than maybe ever. What say you?
I mean, what would you possibly be basing that off of? Like, the songs that are being made now, what are you talking about the versions of music? Like, I'm a little stunned by your as a former academic All-American at Notre Dame. Don't worry, you'll remind people of that.
Hey-o.
Like, where did this come from? Because, like, what are you talking about? The version of White Christmas that's a cover of White Christmas?
No,
like, because White Christmas had to originate somewhere.
No, he's talking about Kelly Clarkson is what he's talking about.
And Clarkson's a damn delight. And don't anybody, like, no, Kelly Clarkson's in a category of her own. I mean, listening to her sing Christmas music gives me the feels in every single, like, from my toes to my head. Yes, so, every ounce of
my
body.
So, Jason, you agree with me then songs like Her Christmas Eve, Christmas Isn't Canceled But You Are, things like that, what we've seen from Sia, Mariah Carey's pop additions to the lexicon, it all seems to hit and slap pretty much harder than a lot of the original stuff.
Oh, okay, let's tone it down though. Like, what, you just throwing Oh Holy Night out of the list? Like, you throwing,
does it slap?
You throwing Little Drummer Boy out of the list?
Does Little Drummer Boy slap?
Yes, it does. And, like, are any of those songs going to make you cry? Because A Perfect Silent Night will have you crying like you're watching Ted Lasso in an airport alone.
Not that.
Do you say that from recent experience?
How many times has Oh Holy Night Does It Slap been asked?
Amber, I only bring that up because I will say this. Oh Holy Night would fall under, I think, the purview of borderline church music, the stuff that you would hear around the holidays. There is plenty of church music that slaps. Like, church throws absolute heat out there. The Christmas mass is just full of bangers when you really listen to it. Not every part of the Christmas holiday repertoire slaps, though. And Little Drummer Boy definitely doesn't.
I mean, Little Drummer Boy is perfection. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Come on, like, we're out on that
listen,
one. Like,
again, no, that one slaps. We played that earlier here for Kimberly Martin, who is out on Christmas, which I know is like an affront to everything Jason Fitz stand for.
I am shooketh. How can you be out on Christmas? Like, I can't even believe this.
Jason's our resident holiday guy. If you've seen him, basically starting in November, the Christmas sweaters start coming out for him. It is definitely a thing. So that is the foundation of Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz, the human being, here on Canty and Golic Jr. Jason, you also moonlight as someone who covers college football around here in addition to all the Christmas stuff. And I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, we got the news today. The College Football Playoff Committee basically came out and said, in light of what we're seeing right now, with the Omicron variant, the rapid spread of COVID-19, that there is a possibility that the national championship in college football this year could be decided by forfeiture if enough teams involved are affected by COVID-19. How'd you feel about that?
This seems absolutely insane to me. And I'm really stunned to hear it. I'm stunned to see it, especially when you're talking about a national championship that, frankly, there's wiggle room. I know there may not be wiggle room with playing the game in Indy, as bummed as you and I would be not to get to go to Indianapolis January 10th. Like, it's not like they couldn't play the game somewhere, somehow, some way, if they need to get the game played. The thought that a national championship could actually just be forfeited, essentially, like, and then the other part of it, and you know this, Mike, like, college football fans are ruthless. Do you really want, as a fan, to win your... If you're Cincinnati and you get the championship by way of forfeiture, you buying the gear, are you ready for the Twitter hate that's going to come every Saturday for the rest of your program's history that your only championship came because the other team just didn't show up? Like, that's a lose for everybody involved.
It feels like we're going to have teams claim national championships, but really that's nothing new for college football. We have seen it all before. So maybe that's the result of all of this, is that this allows multiple teams to have a claim here for a national title. I want to move on to the NFL, though, Jason, real quick, because your Raiders, they got the dub on Monday. They're still on the bubble. They're still here. They're in the mix, if you will. Do you believe in miracles?
I believe in miracles, and I believe in Santa Claus, and I'm not sure even Santa can make this one happen. Look, our projection elves that sit and run all of the numbers will tell you that if the Raiders win out, even before the game on Monday, if they were to win out leading into that game, they had about a 95% chance of making the playoffs. So I want to believe that they can win out, but that would take winning against Denver, which, fine. But then you've got games against the Colts and the Chargers. I'm not sure that even I can turn that into the Christmas miracle I need. But I will say this, like, that was a big win. And I don't care who's not on the field for COVID. I do care about the fact that Myles Garrett took on an offensive line that hasn't looked good this year. And Nick Chubb ran against a defense that's been gashed by the run this year. And both of those things turned out to be non-factors in the way the game played out. The Raiders won an ugly football game, but in a year where we see the Lions beat the Cardinals, it's a week-to-week league. We need to start to accept some of these wins as, hey, cool, the Raiders are now 7-7, and that means they are where a lot of the league is. They're not great teams, but they might be a playoff team.
Kane Angolo Jr. talking to Jason Fitz on the Goodyear Hotline. Speaking of 7-7 teams, Fitz, the Eagles got a win last night, albeit against a Washington team as banged up by COVID-19 as any in the league. We've been doing this week-to-week with Jalen Hurts the entire season here. Where have you been on the job he has done in trying to secure that he's not only the quarterback this year but next year?
Yeah, Jalen should be singing "Oh Holy Night" about the fact that next year's draft class doesn't look good at the quarterback position. This would be a much more difficult decision about Jalen if we were, in fact, looking at a year where we had a Trevor Lawrence at the top of the draft, given the amount of draft equity that the Eagles have. Mike, you know I don't believe in any of these quarterbacks in this year's first round as being franchise savers. There might be one, but there isn't one that I think is a really solid bet that you can look at and say, that's my guy, in my opinion. So Jalen Hurts becomes the benefit of the fact that the Eagles are stacked with draft picks in a draft that has help on the offensive and defensive lines. I think the Eagles have the chance to get the entire roster to play better while they figure out Jalen Hurts. And if he can't lead them, he's going to get another year, not just because he's necessarily an epic quarterback that they should build around, but because I don't think there's a clearer, better option for them that's going to be sitting available.
We did NFC tiers earlier in the show, and it's probably a lazy take to say that the team that's clinched in the Packers stands alone. But do they? Is there any other team in the NFC that you would put up there in that top tier?
You know, so the Rams, I know, haven't played like they belong in the top tier, but my God, I've got to still look at the Rams and the belief that we have in the coaching staff, the belief that we have in the talent in that team. I have a hard time just dismissing the Rams. I think Tampa Bay's been bit by the injury problem in such a way that it's going to make it really hard for them to cut through. The other part of it is, I know that, you know, it's easy to just yell about the Cowboys' inefficiencies, but I feel like we talk out of both sides of our mouths. Why is it that I can sit here and be told repeatedly that if you can run the football and play good defense, you can make it to the Super Bowl, you can win a Super Bowl, and then when the Cowboys do those things, which they do when Pollard and Zeke are healthy, then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, but they're not getting enough production out of Dak. Well, we're shifting the goalposts on that conversation. Do I think the Cowboys are capable of getting hot enough to win in an environment where there may not be a great team in the NFC? Yeah, so I think they should be in that conversation as well. Even though, obviously, Aaron and Green Bay look like they're a little ahead of everybody else, I'm not counting out the Cowboys. I'm not counting out the Rams.
You can hear more of that 7 to 9 Eastern Monday through Friday on Spain and Fitz, our neighbors to the north. You can also catch myself, Jason Fitz, and a lot of the rest of the College Football Digital crew taking you guys up to the college football playoff semis down in Miami and hopefully on time that national championship in Indianapolis. Fitzy, have a Merry Christmas, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You guys have a Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me, and play all the Kelly Clarkson you can because she is a delight.
And listen, on that much, we will always, always agree. Candy Angola Jr. is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. Let's get back to those college football playoff changes here. COVID-19 has finally wound up on the college football doorstep in a meaningful way. What the response could and should look like next on ESPN Radio.
The This is ESPN Radio.
Imagine hearing a song like this come on and thinking, you know what I'd rather hear? The Little Drummer Boy.
I don't agree with you. The Little Drummer Boy doesn't slap. You know, I first of all, I feel like you could do a heck of a remix to it. Like if some DJ, like Steve Aoki, Tiesto, where you at? Let's remix some Little Drummer Boy or Rump a Bump Bump. You know, let's go.
You know what? I am open to that thought here on Canty and Golic Jr. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, the Little Drummer Boy. See, this is what we need, Amber. Forget just covers of old Christmas songs. Full-blown club bangers.
Let's go. I mean, you could drop some serious beats into that song, and it would be highly appropriate, and it would make a lot of sense. Absolutely. We've been playing some bangers in terms of rap songs throughout this show. We were even playing DMX. Where are our club banger?
See?
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. You know, happy new year. Let's go.
It's time. We've had pop versions of this. We've got plenty of hip hop version. It's time for the club bangers to join the Christmas party. Glad we've got this established going forward here. Now, Amber, one of the other things that's been changed up recently, we've seen so much response from the sports world to COVID-19, has now been on the college football front here. We got an announcement earlier today from the College Football Playoff Committee, essentially boiling down to a champion can now be crowned via COVID-related forfeit. We had Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, on earlier today on the show to explain the new policy.
Well, I think the best way to summarize the new policy for college football fans is that a team can advance to the national championship and ultimately win it by its opponents having to forfeit. That is, as it says in the news release, preparation for the worst case scenario. And the CFP broke it down in that if a team cannot play in the national championship because of COVID-19, the other team wins the national title. And it goes on to break down those separate scenarios for the college football players. Playoff semifinals at the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic and also the Orange Bowl, the Capital One Orange Bowl. And so if you have it, they even break it down, and this is, I don't want to say unrealistic, but it's an unlikely scenario that three of the four semifinalists aren't able to play, then that one healthy team that's left is the national champion. And then if both teams can't play in the national title, it's declared a no contest.
And Amber, that is a pretty serious departure from what we've had in this sport that was able to, because of when the calendar shook out, because of when this new variant started becoming prevalent, largely was able to dodge this during the regular season, but now is having to confront this in a very real way.
They heard you praising them yesterday on the radio about how they haven't really had to change anything. So then they went and changed everything when they heard Mike Golic Jr. saying that. Yes, this is a huge departure. Obviously, things have changed quite dramatically here in the national landscape over the last few weeks with the spreading of this new variant. And of course, we're seeing this across sports. I do have questions. I understand that they are trying to game plan here for all scenarios. And like Heather said, there are scenarios that are highly, highly unlikely, and they want to make sure just in case. And we're probably not going to, you know, knock on wood, see those things play out. But it does seem odd that with a national championship, when one of the two teams in the national championship catches COVID, we then name the healthy team the champion because the other team will have forfeited, which in effect, isn't that punishing that team for catching COVID? And it feels kind of odd. I understand that there's a lot of players right now complaining and voicing concerns about not being able to play games because they tested positive for COVID. We're all doing the best that we can with that and trying to keep people off the field and off the court if they are in fact positive for COVID. But then taking away a national title from a team for it, where there is a scenario where if both teams catch COVID and they can't reschedule it by January 14th, or 17th, whatever it is that cutoff, I think it's the 14th, the 17th, I 14th, think is declaring for the draft, right? So it's the 14th. If they can't reschedule it by then there's no national champion at all. So shouldn't we kind of attribute that same principle to, like, if one of the teams catches it? Like, why, if one of the teams catches it, we're punishing that team for catching it, but if both teams catch it, then there's just no national champion. Hopefully none of these scenarios play out because there's no easy answer here.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the key dates involved in all this, Amber. I think college football was one of those sports that especially saw last year up close and personal without a union, because I think part of this conversation that you just mentioned about what the player response might be to this is they have got to, and I think this is a good place to start with in college football, always err on the side of overwhelming caution when you're talking about unpaid labor who does not have a voice in the way things go here. I think that power dynamic matters in the way that we talk about this, as do some very important dates in this conversation. Among those that Heather Dinich mentioned on with us earlier was January 7th is the day where college players have to declare for the NFL draft if they are going to become eligible. And so pushing it back any further than the 14th starts to compromise that process for some guys, starts to get them too close to that window. So I can understand some of this. And Amber, this is one of those spots too where, like, as a former player now, I just always default to right, wrong, or indifferent how I feel about that. Now the charge for everyone involved in those situations is to be as safe as humanly possible. And we saw this happening on the team level for Alabama, who's gone back to a lot of their 2020 protocol in the way they approach meetings. In Michigan, who had one of their offensive linemen come out and say, we're going to get booster shots as a team tomorrow. Because we understand now part of what you just described is true. We are going to be judged, the outcome of our season potentially, based on how well we handle this virus. And while that was probably always true, with this recent Omicron variant, now it is overwhelmingly true that what you do on the field is only going to be about 50 or 60% of the equation here, and how you weather this storm right now is going to be a huge part of it. And so again, as someone who, like, I think athletes do this remarkably well, tell me what the rules are of this current space, and I will make sure I populate that space accordingly. And if I am a player on one of those teams, especially the non-Alabama teams who haven't been through this process, I'm probably campaigning for my coach. Hey, we need to keep everyone here at school. We need to stay as hunkered down in this as possible. Kids are going to be leaving campus at the end of the semester, so we'll have it largely to ourselves like we have in the summer. Let's get through this and get to the thing that we've been working all year for and try and make sure we have that opportunity.
Just go sit in, like, a closet, not around anybody else up until you have to play your games. I mean, that's sort of at the point that we're at, though. But absolutely, you are right. This is now part of the game plan, quite literally. Whereas COVID kind of is part of all of our game plans, whether that means that you've chosen to work from home or whatever you've done differently, used hand sanitizer more, or maybe you've worn a mask, whatever you've done differently in your own lives. This has now become part of sports to the point where it is absolutely part of the game plan, because part of the game now is not catching COVID heading into these championship games.
That is going to be the charge for a lot of these teams. And again, we've seen everyone handling it differently so far, but make no mistake, how they handle it is going to go a long way in deciding, quite literally, based on these rule changes, who ends up hoisting that trophy. That is a lot of the change on the college football front. Coming up next, it seems like things have changed, but my oh my, if you look at the top of the AFC right now, it seems like everything is back to normal. We'll try and see how crystal clear the AFC NFL tiers are after we tell you about Man in the Arena. Now, join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world. The world. And Man in the Arena. New podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. It's a companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries. It's a 10-part podcast. It examines the improbable ripple effects of Tom Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hate, perfection, and fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Back after this, Candy and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in today on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. If you thought this was Sirius XM Holly and not Sirius XM Channel 80, well, I can understand why here, because we've been throwing holiday heat for the entire week, Amber.
That was some serious holiday heat. Tell me that doesn't slap.
Man, I mean,
all these songs could be remixed.
Whew.
All of them. Little Drummer Boy included.
That is, you know what? Shame on me for forgetting that was already part of Christmas. My God.
Shame on you.
It's
you should
in
be
the
ashamed.
Studio right now.
Honestly. I mean, we were all dancing. We were all going crazy.
I mean, Busta Rhymes and Justin Bieber coming together for Christmas. The best way to spread holiday cheer is singing loud for all to hear, or rapping at a pace that the rest of humanity cannot keep up with.
It's really the duo that we should have all seen coming. Like, of course, what we need for Christmas is Busta Rhymes and Justin Bieber. That song slaps hard. You were wrong about Little Drummer Boy. We need more of that.
Hand to God, I will always admit when I am wrong. I was wrong. Little Drummer Boy, when performed by Justin Bieber and Busta Rhymes.
And totally
absolutely
remixed and nearly unrecognizable about the except for the rumble bum bum part.
But yeah, but a shell of its former self. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. If you say barumpa pum pum in a song, does it automatically become a Little Drummer Boy remix? We will find the answer to that on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed at AmberW790 and at Mike Golick Jr. here. Some point over the course of proceedings. Amber, in the meantime, though, maybe we can just iron out the AFC playoff situation as well here, because finishing up Week 15, it feels like now we finally have to start to get our bleep together when it comes to who we actually believe, like, forget can get to the playoffs, because we know this is as wide open a playoff field around an expanded wild card field, an expanded regular season, and a year with as much parity as we've ever seen. So that is going to be fun down the stretch. It's everything that the NFL wanted out of all of this. But on the top end, who we actually buy can win anything of value in the postseason, can win a Super Bowl. Amber, we mentioned the NFC tiers before. The AFC right now honestly feels like it is the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots, and then probably a pretty healthy gap as we then get to, I think, the Colts, the Bills, and the Chargers as that next tier of teams that I think are in a position to go out and win something of value.
Man, you and I disagree very much on the AFC. Now, with the NFC, I actually found this exercise that we're doing with our own tiers much easier than I did with the AFC. You and I both agree on the Chiefs. That's fine. For me, they are in their tier, in the top tier, just by themselves. I absolutely do not have the Patriots in there with them. The Kansas City Chiefs are, frankly, the only team in the AFC that I'm confident in. And even that, I say slightly reservedly because of the way that we've seen things go. Particularly now, they seem to have figured out things on defense, but like their offense is still at times like not exactly what we expected, right? So I say it with caution, but the Chiefs to me do stand alone. Then I would have another tier below them where I actually would have the Bengals and the Bills. And I know that's controversial. I feel like my AFC tiers here are going to be very controversial. But I actually like those teams more than I like the Patriots. It has been a confusing season for the Buffalo Bills. I am just not ready to give up on the Buffalo Bills, I guess, in terms of actually challenging the Chiefs. And maybe some of that is the belief I had in the Bills headed into this season and the expectation that I had for that team. But I do think that team has the talent to get it done. That Bengals team has been exceeding expectations for me. I'm not saying that I believe the Bengals can win a Super Bowl, but when we're talking about tiers, I have a harder time when I look at the Patriots, the Ravens. Ravens would be higher up for me, but the Ravens obviously in this state
so
of health.
Up, yeah.
The Titans, because also banged up, like if Derrick Henry was there, it'd be an entirely different conversation for me. The Colts and the Chargers, I still have questions about. All those teams are in like a third tier for me because I am so confused by those teams. And then I would actually put a fourth tier in my AFC tiers of the bleep happens tier is what I would call this
the
tier.
YOLO tier.
The YOLO tier, which would be the Steelers, the Raiders, the Dolphins, and the Browns.
See, this is Dolphins propaganda coming from Amber Wilson, noted member of
They're
Weird Dian's.
They're still in the mix. They're on the bubble, Mike. Now, given they started 1-7, but baby, we're at 7-7 now.
That
There's
is
still
true.
A chance.
You go all the way down to number 13 in the AFC with the Denver Broncos.
That's why I had four tiers.
At 7-7 in this spot. Amber, I admire your passion and your hope for the Dolphins and the teams in that range here. I believe they firmly have no shot when it comes to winning anything of substance in this postseason. The one I'm, and you know what? I can understand, Amber, where you come at with the Bills. Because you mentioned what they can do to the Chiefs. I absolutely think they're in a position to challenge the Chiefs. Because when you look at how they've structured their team building, it has been to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They thought, all right, we're going to overwhelm them with the same formula. We're going to have a quarterback that can throw it all over the yard, an offense that is built to score points, and a defense that's built to go and cut off the head of the snake by getting after the pass rusher when you look at the guys they've drafted recently. That's why, to me, the Colts and the Patriots become so much more interesting, because this is going to be a styles make fights postseason in the AFC. And we have seen the Patriots decide, all right, we don't have the offensive skill. We don't draft well on the outside, but we've got a quarterback who we don't think will lose it. And we have built ourselves like an absolute battering ram on both sides of the football up front. And that's the off-speed pitch to me that I think is the outlier. We've seen it work that way the entire year for them. And I was telling people about the Colts a month ago, saying if you like that Patriots formula, you've got a team here that's probably more talented up front by sheer just force of their players, Jonathan Taylor at running back, and maybe even some playmaking parts of the defense. But I just think those styles make them so compelling. That's why I'm much more bullish on them.
Well, that's why I have them in the same tier, essentially, as the Patriots. The problem with the Patriots for me, like, you have them so high there with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Patriots do have a rookie under center. Mac Jones has looked great. A rookie under center, though, I mean, you're not getting to a Super Bowl. You're not winning a Super Bowl. So how could your money, right? I mean, am I saying anything crazy? It never happened.
No.
So it feels like in the history of the NFL, if it's never happened, it's probably a lot to ask here of a rookie who is playing very, very well, of a Patriots team that is certainly much better than the team that we saw last season. I just think that what we're doing there a bit is attributing to the Patriots what we want from the Patriots, and everybody wants the Patriots to be back in that way. The only team that I feel confident doing that with is the Chiefs, because technically I think we're doing that a little bit there too. Like, the Chiefs have been confusing for us this season, but because they're their Chiefs, now we do believe in them as they have been playing here much, much better down the stretch. I do believe in the Chiefs because of that history, and I also do, like you mentioned, with those when you gave the Bills analysis. I mean, they are constructed to do it.
Amber, basically looking at the Patriots the way we all looked at Fetch in Mean Girls. Stop trying to make it happen. It's not a thing right now. Now, you mentioned the Cincinnati Bengals. Coming up next, their quarterback, Joe Burrow, is very confident in their team. But not for any of the reasons that you mentioned. We'll tell you why next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
If your holiday classics don't include overt spades references, what are we even doing? Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. Juicer. What? Amber Wilson here on ESPN
You're
Radio.
Juiced up. Every rejoin, how confused are people who are like just tuning in to ESPN Radio and they keep wondering if they put on the wrong channel?
Thank God most of our bosses are already on break and definitely not listening to us right now, because it has been a day around here. And we thank you all for listening to us. If you've been driving around here, watching us veer closer and closer to the edge of madness during Christmas week here.
I mean, it's only Wednesday. What's tomorrow going to be like?
Man, tomorrow we do... Look, so we've been doing our Christmas lists all week long. We're making them. We're checking them twice. We're finding out whose takes around the holidays are naughty or nice. And we have got the granddaddy of them all tomorrow. Top holiday movies. The top Christmas movies. Our top five lists. And I can already tell you, I am getting a lot of heat for my views on Home Alone. You will get those tomorrow when you show up. Our thanks to Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, Tim Legler, our ESPN NBA analyst, and Kimberly A. Martin, as well as Jason Fitz, for joining us on the show today. If you missed any of those conversations, download, subscribe, follow the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast. Give your friends and family a gift during the holidays. Take their phones. Open up Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and then subscribe to our podcast inside of there so it shows up without them expecting it. In the meantime, though, we have done this long enough here. It's time to finish things off and go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is three and out.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here. As we go three and out, we mentioned our AFC playoff tiers, the teams that we were looking for and confident in. Amber Wilson said that she has belief in the Cincinnati Bengals.
Joe Burrow.
Now listen, she felt kind of wild. Why not? The Bengals are a good team. Joe Burrow's a good quarterback. And according to Joe Burrow, he's confident too in their ability, not only on the field, but off the field when it comes to the low COVID-19 totals on their squad. This is Joe Burrow's assessment of why they've done so well beating the virus.
You know, we're doing a great job with our COVID protocols. Fortunately, there's not a ton to do in Cincinnati, so it's not, you know, nobody's going out to clubs and bars and getting COVID every weekend. But we've been healthy.
Now, listen, as someone who has frequented the Queen City from time to time, who very much enjoys Cincinnati, I got to say, Joe Burrow's absolutely right.
I didn't know that about Cincinnati. I've never been to Cincy. I'm going to believe that he knows what he's talking about, though, and maybe it has something to do with it. I don't know. What I will say is the reason that I did have the Bengals there in that second tier along with the Bills is in part because the Bengals are healthy. They're by far the healthiest team in their division. They're one of the healthiest teams, if not the healthiest team, in the conference. So I do think, and we're all going to think moving forward here, that health matters. Avoiding COVID-19 is going to be part of the game, as we keep talking about today throughout the show. The Bengals have been doing just that.
It is part of the calculus.
I guess because Cincinnati's boring.
Hey, listen, you can go to Skyline Chili. You can eat Grater's ice cream. It'll all keep you home, safe, and away from the virus here. That is part of the calculus going forward here. Speaking of calculus, Pablo Torre hosts the ESPN Daily podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. It's presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Amber, I didn't anticipate I would be saying, in consecutive days, nice things about Michigan football. As a former Notre Dame football player, that is not a place I'm overly fond of, but as someone who appreciates good things, they were the Joe Moore Award winner for the best offensive line unit in college football yesterday, and so it should be no surprise that their offensive line is leading yet again. According to offensive lineman Andrew Stuber for the Michigan Wolverines, the entire football team will be going to get their COVID-19 booster shots today as a team. He was speaking to the media Tuesday and said they hadn't had any issues with the virus leading up to their CFP game, but they aren't willing to take any chances. Applaud the effort from the young man. No surprise, the offensive line leading the way there.
You do not like Michigan football. You will obviously make an exception if we are talking about the O-line of any team. That's what we have learned here.
Yes, more or less. Listen, I'm a very simple man with simple goals in life, and that is to celebrate large excellence. Speaking of excellence, how about this? With the rash of COVID-19 positives in the NBA, we've seen a lot of players having to go deep into the well, deep into the benches, deep into the G League, or deep into the past to find solutions. Joe Johnson, ISO Joe, is back and better than ever with the Boston Celtics. He was drafted by the Celtics in 2001, Amber. What the hell were you doing 20 years ago?
In 2001, I was entering college is what I was doing that many years ago. And he, of course, had just entered the NBA. It has apparently been so many years, 19 years, and I mean, almost 20 years, 19 years, 300 whatever days, that is actually longer than every player in the NBA's career except for like five guys. Like, that's how long it has been since he was on the Celtics.
That is what we are dealing with right now in the NBA. In all seriousness, stay safe, everyone. A lot going on out there. Stick around. Spain and Fitz next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.